Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast with Sharon Lecter. And I love bringing superstars on with me, and I'm so excited. I met Brittany Turner just a few months ago when she reached out to me, and it was out of the blue. We started working together, and I'm so impressed with this young lady. As you know, I'm always looking for that next generation of truly inspirational leaders that have been there, done that, and now want to make the world a better place. And I love Brittany's story, and I've got a bio that I'll read in a moment, but a lot of people create success and then they decide to give back. Well, Brittany always wanted to give back. And so by wanting to always give back, she created the success so that she could continue giving back more and more and more. And now she's attracting other people to her who have that same desire to make the world a better place. So Brittany, thank you for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. You think it was out of the blue that I reached out to you, but you were put on my heart so strongly during the lockdown of COVID-19. A lot of people were giving up and feeling sorry for themselves, and I was looking for ways to expand my life and my mind, and you have been so instrumental in your work that I am just so honored to be on the show today. So thank you so much for the impact you've had on my career. I've been listening to you since I was 17 and sharing every single thing you've done with everybody I know. And I can say most of my success, besides just taking those actions, to just the work that you've put out there and how it's affected my decision-making. So thank you very much.
Well, you've just made my day, my week, my month, probably my year. Thank you very much. So let me share with the audience your actual resume and your bio, because it's really incredible. And I think it's just proof positive that when somebody tells you can't do something, that you truly can. I say, why not? And I think you say, watch me, because your career has been a testament to making a decision and moving towards it without letting somebody deter you. You bought your first real estate piece property, I think, when you were 18, if I remember correctly. And then you founded your company, Ariel, at the age of 21, and that mission, with the mission of elevating people as well as places. And you'll get more about that, how she helps countries and cities recover. She started working out of her car. She lived in her car and was working for free, and now you have over $200 million worth of active domestic and international real estate projects. And she's 32, right? 32?
32.
Yeah, amazing. And you also form multiple companies under that overarching Ariel brand, all of them dedicated to the mission of empowering people, sustaining the planet, and utilizing capitalism as a force for good. Remember that, force for good. And through the success, you are resetting the standard for what's possible for women and young girls around the globe. And you've won many awards, both nationally and internationally. But your commitment in the company is to a triple bottom line approach. It's proving that conscious business is not only viable, but the wave of the future. And that triple bottom line, explain what triple bottom line means, Brittany.
Triple bottom line means you don't just care about profit. You care about people and the planet as well as profit. And you don't just judge your success by that. If you're not helping people on the planet, then you don't think that you're successful.
I love that. So let's talk about that 18-year-old. I mean, you were, I think, the second of six kids, right?
And your family,
and you were homeschooled. And so What triggered that first step into taking off and creating your own destiny?
I wanted to be a missionary in Africa. Since I was 12 years old, it was the vision for my life. And I went to this survival school that taught you literally how to be unstoppable. We were trained by Green Berets and survivalists from all over the world to just be freaking tough and really smart in the way that we execute. And my mission when I was going to move to Africa, it's just the whole plan for my life, was to help end human trafficking. And so I was getting trained in emergency medicine and ready to like kick in doors and rescue babies. And I had gone on mission trips every year since I was 13, and I would work 5 jobs at a time. I really hated asking people for money. And this guy came in and he started teaching these principles from this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I had never heard of before because I thought wealth would have nothing to do with my life. And he started teaching us the difference between the mindset of the rich, poor, and middle class. And then he said there's this thing called cash flow, that if you bought a house with no money down — this is in 2007, by the way, anybody can do that — then you rent it out for more than your mortgage. That's a thing called cash flow. If you make $300 and you do that 10 times, you can live in Africa and you never have to send a sponsorship check again. And so I was like, well, I should read this book. And I read this book and bought my first house at 18, again, 2008 to late 2007, early 2008, right before the crash, literally the month before the crash. But in the process of buying it, I learned so much, because I started Googling what colleges teach you financial education around really building wealth and how to flip houses to be able to gain enough money to buy an apartment complex to live off that cash flow, and nothing did. So instead of going to college, which was not a very popular decision, I read all of Sharon's books. And so I would sit there just like absolutely starving and waitressing and reading these books and slowly putting the pieces together to end up where I am now, which the vision changed from moving to Africa to developing hand up, not hand out, economic systems to be able to transform hopeless areas into economically thriving areas, so that I can eventually do that at scale enough, really to help wipe out poverty at its root. That's my story in a nutshell.
And I think, you know, your passion for making the world a better place has been the driving force from a lot of what you do. But you've also been very creative in a time when you had — for being so young, you've had a lot of naysayers along your path that didn't believe that you could do what you wanted to do, particularly being in the — not only were you flipping houses, but then you actually stepped into the man's world of construction and redevelopment at a very tender and young age. So talk a little bit about some of those obstacles and barriers along the way and how you were mentally able to get through them.
That's a really good question. And to me, I haven't really had anybody that did believe I could do it. And I still rarely find people that believe that I can do what I want to do now, because it's done nothing but expand as I've gone along this journey. And I realize the more resources I have, the more people I can help. The more I know, the more people I can help. I really want to solve these issues, and I know they're solvable, so I'm just going to keep going. But there's been one thing that kept me, I guess, unaffected. I want to say unaffected. It still hurts my feelings. But not stopping when people say, what do you think you're doing? Or da-da-da-da-da. It's, I met a little girl when I was 17. I was in Costa Rica, up in the middle of nowhere. And we put on a women's conference. And at the very end, we were praying over everybody, and I met a little girl. And I asked her name. She was the very last person I was talking to, and she couldn't speak. Now, this is horrible, and I hate to actually share the story, but this is my real story. She couldn't speak, and I asked the translator what happened. In that community, it is socially acceptable for fathers to break in the child, and as an infant, one out of every 4 babies dies, like infant, from sexual abuse from the parent. and or a relative. And this little girl had her vocal cords destroyed as a baby. And like all of you, I was furious, very furious. And I went back and to my tent and I got on my knees and I said, God, whatever it looks like, I want to be the one that comes back and makes this not okay. This is not socially acceptable. This should not be a thing. And I feel like that prayer has been answered by, I actually got taken out of the mission field at that point and put into business. And I was frustrated for a long time because I thought like my identity is built for being a responder in the mission field. I didn't even know or appreciate at the time I was gaining all the skills I need to come back and actually make a real difference, have that influence, have the resources, have the ability to shift mindsets into people understanding the value of a child, the value of a woman. And so for me, when I have had countless people not believe in what I'm trying to do or who I am as a person, I look at them and I just ask, where were you when I met that little girl? Mm-hmm. Where were you when I decided what I dedicated my life to doing? You weren't there that day and you're not going to be there in 5 years. So I don't really give a crap what you say, because it has nothing to do with this journey. So know who you are and whose you are, as well as whose voices matter in your life for real and why they matter in that specific area. And you've got to decide that your life calling is between yourself and your relationship with God. If you believe in God, you have one chance. And so most of the people who don't believe in you, you won't even remember their name.
Well, I want to take a step back, because you said you really can't think of anybody along the way that has believed in what you can do and supported you. And I want you to know that that's changed now, because I'm here to support you. And I think you can achieve anything you want. In fact, I was actually listening to one of your podcasts and you made a similar statement about having mentors that even the mentors who were supposed to support you would challenged and questioned your ability to succeed. So as a mentor to you, I want you to know that I believe in you and I think you can accomplish anything you set your mind to. Obviously, you've proven it and you continue to strive and you're doing it for the right reasons. So the doors are giving you that opportunity. Your success is a testament to the fact that you are making the world a better place and you're giving back. So I really want to applaud you and I want you to get that out of your mind.
Because I received that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about, you went from flipping houses and then you went into urban redevelopment and you had people tell you basically thinking you were gentrifying and you were going into houses that were basically with squatters and vagrants, right? And you were really bringing some stability back into those neighborhoods. And yet you still met with resistance. Like crazy.
Well, there's a good way to do gentrification and there's a really bad way. And the G word is such a hot topic that we're going to get haters just for saying it. But I'm going to share for especially my developers who are listening in on this call that there's a mindful way to revitalize or there's a way to go in and just gentrify. And so my vision has actually always been to practice in America how to accelerate positive transformation. And so with that, you have to look at all of the stakeholders, not just your end buyer or your own pocket. This is literally the most difficult way to make money in this business. I figured it out, but it's difficult. So look at all the stakeholders, which is who currently lives in the neighborhood. Why do they live there? What do they want? How does what I'm doing affect this direct community, the city, the state, the nation, the everything? And understanding your approach and the way in which you do it can have a crazy ripple effect. So for us, we've never gone after like just this house because the value is X, Y, Z. We purposely go in with a different approach because I'm mostly just trying to learn how to create hope in hopeless places, not even just do real estate. It's a very different approach. So I'd say, why is this known as a hopeless spot or a bad neighborhood? Crime is high. There's a lot of abandoned homes. Nobody's been investing in the area for X amount of years. There's no police presence. There's no opportunity. There's no transportation. There's no da 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 da. What's the checklist? for why people would consider it a bad neighborhood. And then we just start addressing that. And so normally we just clean, I literally will take my whole staff out and we'll physically clean up the street, like the garbage. We'll plant trees, we'll put in lighting, we work with the city to put in sidewalks. And then I'll buy up the abandoned houses that nobody wants, and there's a lot of crime happening because it's just squatters and drugs happening in areas that are have no one in them. So by resetting up and establishing a nice neighborhood and or targeting crime houses, this is the part that I don't normally talk about publicly. But yeah, I'm going after you, crime houses. I don't care. You're not a contributing part of society. If you're going to destroy your neighborhood and make it unsafe for people to live there, I'm going after it. So I've bought up just like, I've lost money buying like the hub of drug dealing where this, you know, SWAT team's constantly in there. I'll buy that house, lose money on it just to make the area a safe place. And that has nothing to do with poverty at all. That has nothing to do with how long someone's lived there. It's a lot of times just a bad spot. One house will ruin a whole neighborhood. So what's cool is when you do buy that house, the area has a chance to change too. And the person has a chance to change because they lose their network. I've bought one drug dealer house where they tried to stop drug dealing before they moved out, and they ended up getting really hurt because people wouldn't let them change. So again, hot topic, but I've had hundreds and hundreds of thank you letters for people who have lived in these neighborhoods for 30, 40 years and have never been able to walk down their street. But I wanted to come back to even just cleaning up the street. When you shift an environment of what the standard is, a lot of times people just start taking pride in it themselves and cleaning up their own yard, their own house, their own neighborhood.
Power of the environment. We talk about it all the time.
Absolutely. We watch it happen all the time.
You give them hope. You give them the vision that there is something that's better. And I think even back when you were doing that, if I remember correctly, you were involving local charities. And so your vision of always doing well so you can do good has been from the very beginning of your career. And I think that's really something that proves that you walk the talk. So accelerate a little bit. You went from the urban revitalization, we'll say that instead of gentrification. And then you decided to develop some special purpose communities, right? One for artists and one for healthy living in the area around Nashville, I believe.
What's really fun is when you own more land, it's still all urban, but when you own more land, you get to kind of say what the theme is. And what I realized was, wow, instead of just shifting like slowly over time, like an area's potential and getting jobs to move in and the local people to be employed with those jobs and have that training, when we own the whole development, 10, 20, 30 acres, we can kind of design what the environment is like. Developers don't realize how much power you have. Like everybody exists in something that a developer made. And so the way you design it affects what people think is possible for their life. And so I would literally do something so profound that I've found very few people to do this. And this is one of my best tricks, Sharon. I would sit there with my team and we would gather around and we would summon Google and ask, what are the top issues in Tennessee? And then we would incorporate that a response to that in our development. So it's not that hard, people. We found out that at the time, Tennessee was number 4 in the nation for highest rating of obesity-related deaths. Crazy, number 4. And so we designed a health and wellness community. Okay, how can we design something that we named one of the streets inside the development, Go Run? And if we're going to inspire people to get out and get active, like how can we do it creatively without being annoying? And so we give everybody a bike that buys a house, and we paid to attach to a greenway nearby. And we made a whole access point for the mass surrounding community to be able to get to work via the greenway versus driving. And we kept all the trees. So there's really fun ways that you can address social needs through just being really intentional.
It comes does. Along with what I teach was successful businesses solve a problem or serve a need, and you were right on top of it. So not only was there a housing need, but the need for healthy living. That's fantastic.
I'll tell you that one of the common denominators that I look for now, because I've had to reverse it in my brain, is people don't, if they don't call me crazy, then we're too late. You know, everybody says that idea will never work, blah, 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 blah. And I found for all my innovative people really listening to this podcast, if you are innovative, then there really won't be a lot of data for the point you're trying to make. And so you have to just find it in order to get your loans, figure out really good creative ways to express your vision so that people can try to get it. But most people live in, need to have it proven before they'll do it. And so it is harder to be a pioneer, but it's absolutely amazingly worth it. And so
I've taken your pioneering and done it in so many different directions. You know, you also are in the midst of doing all kinds of disaster recovery, certainly in the BVI area. You've helped with the, after all the hurricanes, and of course in Tennessee after the tornadoes. I know you've been active there. And then you also, I mean, there's so much we can talk about. We'd be here all day, so I'm accelerating. But you also are in a puppy recovery. I saw that just recently. So a lot of it, you just got a huge heart, and I just really love it. Share, you're now working alongside governments as it relates to disaster recovery, bringing a little business sense into that and coordinating with all the efforts. Share a little bit about what you're doing there.
So the long-term vision, again, when it switched from me moving to Africa and living, serving a village, to how do I, like literally raising my hand and saying, God, how do I actually solve this? The vision shifted into how can you wipe out poverty at its root in the areas that need it most? Of course, we have a ton of issues here in America. But I'm not finding babies in trash cans. I'm not. The level of desperation is different depending on where you go. And we support triple the nonprofits here than we do overseas. So of course I very much care locally and have a local give back, but we also have a global give back too. And so this journey for me has been, how do I get to help develop nations by creating jobs and creating economic hotspots? And what's interesting is just kind of seeing how real estate development can get people excited and share that hope that makes them start just having enough faith to like do the business they've wanted to do or start the thing that they all have the ability. They just don't want to be first most of the time. And so what I've been doing is going in after disasters, working with different nations, coordinating relief, as well as helping them on the front end of resiliency planning now. Because there's five phases to a disaster, and it's resiliency, relief, recovery, redevelopment, and really moving into innovative new economic pillars so that they can be stronger after a storm. And we go in after disasters really because that's when they're most open, and we're sharing ideas. What works in Jamaica can work in BVI, can work in the USVI, can work in Puerto Rico because it's all in the Caribbean. And sharing best practices. Of the 20 pieces on the template, 18 of those will also work in Kenya, mm-hmm. will also work in Uganda, but you might shift out certain pieces. So it's always been about sustainable, accelerated recovery. And we're starting with hurricanes. We'll move into earthquakes next, and then poverty, war. All of those can be considered disasters. But every time I go to one, I'm like, the lessons are the same. And when
everybody's watching and listening right now, Brittany, are in awe of what you've done and what you still do and what you're creating. But I wanted to really highlight you because you are a huge testament to what a young woman can do in this world. And you also, one of your goals is to inspire other women and other young women to reach for whatever their dreams are. But you've also taken what you've done and said, there are other people out there that are doing it. There are other people out there that want to do it. And so you've created within the last year or so, G-Force. And I think it's really important for everybody watching and listening to understand that you can create a movement. You can highlight what you're doing. And as I have often shared, my dad would ask me, have you added value to someone's world today? Well, Brittany, you're doing that in spades. But you also wanted to create a collective of other people who want to do the same thing. So tell us a little bit about, you know, not only this, you're doing the disaster, but then you're saying, well, you know, let me bring other people into the force, the G-Force. So talk about the creation and what you're doing with G-Force.
I really started at the beginning of COVID-19. When that all started hitting the fan and being a known thing, I knew that many are called and few are chosen. And I think few are chosen to like really walk out what they're capable of because they don't have the network mindset or resources to accomplish what they really set out to do. And so I knew that there's these incredible force for good entrepreneurs out there that I wanted to help stabilize. And so the idea had been on my mind for a long time because I've always missed that network. You know, even like you had heard on my other podcast, even the people, very few people I listen to, even people I paid as mentors would be like, nope, impossible. You care too much, Brittany, about people on the planet to actually make money. And that's really hard to hear when you're already insecure that maybe you're doing it wrong because you're figuring everything out as you go. Like that's just, I didn't go to college. I don't know what they teach you. If you're more confident after that to start a business or if, I don't know how it normally is supposed to feel, but I can tell you, I've never known for sure that anything I'm going to do will work. I'm just trying and won't give up until it does. And so I'm trusting other people to pour into my life and tell me like a couple of the steps. And then even they will tell me sometimes it won't work because I care too much. And I finally just said, screw it. I know you can care and I know you can be successful at the same time. And I know you can accumulate resources because money is just an expansion tool of the heart and you can do more with more. So I want to create my own freaking group that's normal and we're sharing how we are all doing it. And so I kickstarted it as COVID started because I knew people were going to be knocked out of the game right and left. Only the strong are going to survive this. And what's been so beautiful is they almost call it like entrepreneur church. It's not this, it's not about God. It's not about any of that at all, but it's somewhere we meet every week on the virtually and we share what is working. Where is the opportunity? How can we grow? And every single person has either doubled or quadrupled their business with COVID in effect. And so it's truly a testament of a lot of the things that you speak of. I mean, so many of these ideas, the mastermind. I mean, where am I getting these ideas, people? You're already listening to Sharon. I'm just implementing them. And so implementing these genius concepts and having those masterminds to get through life with like-minded people with like-minded vision and purpose has been one of the most valuable, if not the most valuable thing I've ever done in my career. So I've loved it, but G4 stands for Force for Good Entrepreneurs. And we've got, you know, we meet once a week, we have quarterly get-togethers and we're going to travel the world and do really incredible life-changing trips together. Whenever
so if people want to know more about it, how can they find out more about GForce?
GForceMastermind.com. We also have an Instagram, which is @GForce. And we've got some really fun podcasts called Broke to Woke, as well as GForce Podcast. So I'll be interviewing Sharon for those coming up very soon. So be listening because she's incredible.
Well, thank you. And you know, when you talk about Force for Good, I've had the same thing happen in my career, Brittany, many, many times. People say, I'm just too nice to be successful. And I go, you know, let's start a new trend, success with grace, right? Not success with grace, but you know, it's not competition, it's collaboration. And you know, it's a not a win-lose situation. It can be, should be a win-win-win, win for you, win for the other party, and win for the customer or the client. So it's something that, It is hard. You know, sometimes you can get jaundiced. You'll sit back and you look at some of these cutthroat entrepreneurs or cutthroat CEOs who are really not nice people. They're narcissistic and they make a lot of money doing it. But at the end of the day, you know, what's happened to their heart? I'm not quite sure I want to exchange the heart for the bank account. So I do believe you can do well by being great, doing business by solving a problem, serving a need, and doing it with grace. So I support you 100%.
I love that. Thank you. I think there's a new wave that we're going to see. And it's what we've seen maybe on TV has been people in business operating from a greed operating system. And I think the future is people are actually living what they've been hungry for. Doesn't matter what generation you are, and you're going to see people operating from a give operating system. And so you don't have to pick in order to be successful, I have to take. because we are now recognizing the abundance and that it's infinite. And there's so much opportunity, especially in America. You have so much access here. It's insane. If you try it all, you can make it really well. And there's amazing books that you have access to and education tools. So thank you again for making those, Sharon.
Well, and you're going to be writing your own. We're going to be talking about that as well. So Brittany, I really appreciate you being with me. You're going to hang out with me because we're going to do a second quick interview on the, just for the private Facebook group, Play Big Movement. So if you've not been part of that group, please go ahead and join us so you can hear the rest of Brittany's story. But again, please connect with her. What a testament to really believing in yourself and finding the way. Don't stop. Just keep moving, because if one path doesn't get you where you want to go, there's another path out there. And so you just keep working on it. So a last word of encouragement for our folks, Brittany.
Only listen to people you want to be like and in that specific area.
Excellent. I love that. It is all about environment. It's all about who you listen to. And if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in trouble. So you always want to have people that are challenging you and pushing you outside your comfort zone, because that's how you grow. So thank you, Brittany. And thank you all for watching. And please rewind, because this was just full of incredible information. And make sure that you go out and have that giver mentality. And make sure that when we talk about the Play Big Movement as being number one in your field, living your legacy and creating maximum impact. And Brittany, you are a true testament to that. So thank you all for watching and listening. Until next time, have a great day. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.